This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the IAHE Informer Podcast. Your host is Tara Bentley, veteran homeschool mom and managing editor for the Informer magazine. The Informer is a ministry of the Indiana Association of Home Educators. For over 30 years, the IAHE has been the voice of Indiana homeschool families. The foundational purpose of the IAHE is to serve the Lord Jesus Christ by supporting and encouraging Indiana's home educators. Our mission is to encourage, protect, and serve by keeping you informed about the news and subjects that really matter. We'll cover important topics including educational opportunities, legislative issues, and finding support and encouragement. We'll also bring you interviews with our very special guests, including nationally recognized convention speakers, as well as showcasing local Indiana parents and homeschool alumni. Join us as we explore topics relevant to IAHE families all year long.
Good afternoon and welcome to our production of the Informer podcast. My guest today is Allison Slatter, and Allison is a part of our IAHE legislative team. I want to just share a little bit with our audience about Allison. Allison has volunteered on campaigns and at the polls since the age of 14. In 1996, she was an elected delegate to the Indiana State Republican Convention. And shortly after graduating from Indiana University in 1997, she accepted a position working for former Representative John Hostetler in Washington, D.C. And after a few years, she helped coordinate the national effort among prominent Christian leaders to support the federal marriage amendment on Capitol Hill. In 2005, newly elected Representative Mike Sodrel brought Allison back to the Hill as his senior legislative analyst. And Allison retired from public service after the birth of her first child in 2006. She has spoken at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association's Capital Action Program training and served as a student action team director for two campaigns, Generation Joshua, and she has served on the Indiana Association of Home Educators Legislative Committee since 2013. Welcome to the program, Allison.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here.
We are very grateful to have you as a part of our legislative team. The IHE is a volunteer organization, and we count on dedicated people with you, and we're just like you, and we're just so grateful to have you as a part of our team. Can you just share a little bit with our audience about why you decided to volunteer with the legislative team?
Well, as you mentioned in your lovely introduction of me, I have history in legislation. I have history in government. I kind of know how the federal government thinks about things. I've dealt with my fair share of bureaucrats. And I also know how legislators think and how that interplay goes on between the executive and the legislative branches. And because of that, I know that the freedoms that we have here in Indiana could very easily just overnight go just with a very simple executive order or even something as very innocuous getting passed into our own legislature. Fortunately, we have a lot of good people that are out there, but you still need people to scrub those bills and to watch out for those little tiny commas or the insertion of homeschool in a bill that might not seem much to anybody else, but when it gets into the law and the legal repercussions, it can actually be a big deal.
Absolutely, and I think that having someone with your kind of experience be a part of our organization is so important. I'll admit that I am absolutely one of those moms who sometimes over the years, it's just so easy, I think. We live in Indiana. We live in a state where our homeschool freedom seems very easy, but of course we never know how quickly that will go away. And I think I take for granted a lot those freedoms, and I think a lot of Indiana homeschoolers do, but people like you and the rest of our legislative team are so dedicated to watching over all of those potential threats, and we just so appreciate all that you do.
Really what opened my eyes is my husband worked for 8 years for Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and I saw the kind of things that went on in the organization, not just because of Indiana, but nationally in all states, and that really opened my eyes to how easy these things can happen. And so because of that, that's partly why I understand the threat. You know, yes, it's from my background, but also because we've spent so much time hearing what's been going on nationally that we're like, oh, so if we're not vigilant here, we could end up like some of the other states where there's a lot more regulation. And trust me, none of us want that.
Right. Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I really wanted, I know you and I have discussed a few things in the past, and so I just wanted to kind of share some of that with our readers. In August, I had spoke at a kickoff event for a support group up in northern Indiana, and one of the points that I had made when I was speaking was about the idea that homeschooling is not really a school choice issue, and I know that's really a popular buzzword these days. We hear that a lot across the country. But it's really more of a parental rights issue. And so at the end of the evening, I had a lot of people come up to me after we were done, and they were just really, some of them, I guess, were really just kind of surprised about that idea. It was a kind of a new concept for them to understand that it really was a parental rights issue. And I even had one particular person in the audience who was really challenged by this idea, and she really was questioning me about where we get our right to home educate. Where do homeschoolers get that freedom, and what are we basing it on? And so you and I have discussed this just a little bit, but I just thought that that'd be something that would be really helpful and information to share with our audience. So where do we get our right to homeschool our children?
Sure. My understanding, and again, I should state I'm not an attorney. However, let's just say I wasn't homeschooled until I became an adult. And so I did a little bit of homeschooling of my own to kind of find out what is this about, because I heard a lot of that at HSLDA, but I didn't quite understand it. So I did a little bit of my own homeschooling for myself, and what I found was that we derive our rights from homeschooling from the Bill of Rights, which is the liberty, but it's also enforced in the states through both the First and the 14th Amendments. And so this is occurring there are a couple court cases that were pretty instrumental. The very first one was Meyer versus Nebraska in 1923, and that was in response to some of the compulsory attendance laws that had just recently been passed back in the 1920s. Interestingly enough, prior to the early 1900s, there's literally no cases challenging parents' right to educate, because it was assumed that parents had all the authority necessary to properly educate their children, which is interesting compared to how we think about it today. But the first initial cases that we had on some of this was Meyer versus Nebraska in 1923 and Pierce versus Society of Sisters in 1925. And while the Supreme Court reinforced that we have two fundamental rights for parents, one is the right to educate, and two is the right to educate without government standardization. So in our case, that would be homeschooling, because even private schools, for the most part, are under some form of government standardization. And those are the initial cases that opened this up and reaffirmed that the parents still have that right. However, what the Supreme Court did do is it said that it has an interest in children's rights or in children's education, making sure that they are. Now, in Wisconsin versus Yoder, which is 1972, it spelled out what that interest is. So it says the state's interest is defined by the U.S. Supreme Court that children have to grow up to be literate and self-sufficient. So that it basically means that a child should be able to go out, get a job, and perform in society reasonably well without government support. That is what the standard is for the Supreme Court as far as a child being educated. So long as a parent can prove that a child is becoming literate and is going to become self-sufficient, then the parent has done its duty towards its child. But also interestingly, in Yoder versus Wisconsin, the court also said that the Western culture reflects a strong traditional parental concern for the nurturing upbringing of children, and it is established beyond debate and in an enduring tradition. And that's what a lot of people don't understand anymore. We start talking about schools and what schools are going to do for our kids, and that the schools have to educate. Well, really and truly, you know, the long history of our country really states that it's the parent's job to homeschool, to educate the child. And the parent can choose to use a public school or they can choose to use a private school or a public school online, or they can choose to homeschool. But it's their choice how they choose to educate that child, so long as they become literate and self-sufficient.
If we base our homeschool freedoms on this case history and on our laws, how is that different from what the movement, I guess, that you see nowadays across the country that we label as school choice?
I see homeschooling and school choice as being complementary, but I do not see us being the same. I think most homeschoolers are pro-school choice in the sense that we think every parent should be able to choose the education that they deem best for their child. But I think a homeschooler's view of that is based in parental consent, whereas maybe some other people see school choice as based on a notion that somehow school is the proper method of education. And therein's where we differ. We don't see that the state is necessary to educate children. And as we support our own parental rights in home educating, we also support other people's parental rights in choosing to do another option, whether it be public, private, or online public.
You mentioned that you've seen a lot of cases across the country through your own experience and through your husband's experience with HSLDA. So how easily can some of these parental rights be eroded?
Well, a lot of it comes down to, well, actually, it's very interesting. The very very first part time where we see parental rights starting to be eroded, in the, specifically in the area of education, is when we started seeing compulsory attendance ages of schools. That was the very first time ever that parental rights in education had ever been infringed upon in the United States. So everything that we're seeing today starts with compulsory attendance age. And while most, I believe all 50 states have a compulsory attendance age, you know, we do have to be aware and understand that this, all of this started, all of this control, all of this regulation, all of the things that we're starting to see grow up within the system started because of something as simple as saying, hey, shouldn't kids go to school from ages, you know, whatever to whatever? And so now we're starting to see them push that age limit even lower. And again, don't misunderstand what's happening here. They are infringing upon your parental rights. The lower that compulsory attendance age, the less rights you have. Many children, have learning disabilities or other such things that, you know, at ages 3 and 4, you might not necessarily catch, but you know that your child, you know in your heart, your child is not ready for formalized education. And if you know that, then you, at this point in time, have the right to say, I'm going to wait, I'm going to hold off, I'm going to let my child mature a little bit more. Maybe his coordination isn't quite right. Maybe you think maybe his eyes aren't focusing in the way they ought to be focusing in. But you, the parent, have that choice. Whereas if they lower the mandatory attendance age to, say, 4 or 5, you no longer have that option. You must send that child to school, or you must home educate, regardless of the condition of your child.
Well, and it's interesting that that's exactly where we walked into the compulsory school age issue, because it's absolutely a hot topic right now in our state and across the country. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We have a short message here, and then when we come back, we will follow up and discuss this a little bit further on the push to lower the compulsory school age, and we'll be right back.
Are homeschool rights important to you? Do you and your family want to know more about the legislative process? Attend the IAHE's Homeschool Day at the Indiana State House. Join us on Wednesday, February 25th, 2015, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for a day full of educational activities for the whole family. Take your family on a scavenger hunt through the State House. Visit with historical reenactors highlighting two famous Hoosiers. Participate in a prayer walk. Join our legislative impact session to learn how a bill becomes a law. Talk with elected officials during our town hall. And don't miss the main event, the IHE rally begins at 11 a.m. The hope is to have every legislator meet at least one homeschool family from their district. Will you be that family? Visit the IHE website for details.
Hey, welcome back. This month, we've seen a lot of activity in Indianapolis, actually leading a push to lower the compulsory school age. And the IAHE stands opposed to any attempts to change this. Earlier this week, we actually issued a legislative alert to bring awareness to the push for federally funded preschools. And actually, we saw a lot of movement on that today. But I know that, Allison, you spent a lot of time over the past couple weeks researching this issue, and you actually recently testified before the Interim Study Committee on Education about early childhood education. And you had said that a child's bond with his or her family, their parents in particular, is a better predictor of academic progress and social-emotional well-being. And the earlier children are removed from the home, the less likely time they have for family bonding, while increasing other stressors to the child emotionally and physically. Can you share a little bit more about this study and what you've learned in doing your research?
Well, there's multiple studies to arrive at that conclusion. Almost every teacher or educator out there will tell you without a shadow of a doubt that how well a child does in school is it can be directly linked back to how involved a parent is in their child's education. You know, someone who's hands-off and kind of nonchalant about it, the kid may not do quite as well. But if a parent who's there at the parent conferences, they want to know how their kid's doing, what they can do at home, how they can support the teacher, those are the children that do better. And, of course, in homeschooling, of course, that's what parents do. We are the teacher. We're the principal. We're the special ed teacher. We're everything to our kids. And we know that for sure that direct one-on-one parental relationship that we have with our children is an extremely important bond that our kids need to develop normally and in a healthy way. There was a really interesting article that was published on August 30th in 2012, and it highlighted a Dr. Gordon Neufeld, who is a Canadian developmental psychologist. And he went into talking about how that early learning isn't necessarily a good thing. That can actually cause inappropriate attachments for children. A child who says, "Ooh, I can't wait to go spend time with my friends," rather than that being a good thing, may have actually become attached or bonded to her peers and not to her parents, which obviously, we know in life, we move around, we change schools, different things happen, and that peer group changes, whereas your parents don't, for the most part. They pretty well stay the same. Now, with that being said, I mean, obviously there are exceptions to the rules with family development, formations and that kind of thing. But for the most part, we know that a bond with parents is far more healthier for a child than a bond with any other group, especially a peer group. And moving on from that, they also found that young children in a research that was done, it's called How Much is Too Much? The Influence of Preschool Centers on Children's Social and Cognitive Development. And it was done by Susanna Loeb, Margaret Bridges, and others. Ruth Fuller also was another name. But they went and they did a little bit of research, and they looked at the academic gains of these children in preschool programs. But they also looked at their social and psychological, emotional well-being as well. And while they did find that the average child that went to a center did gain in pre-reading and math skills, but what they found was that their negative social behavior actually increased as well. The academic effects usually wore off by about first grade or earlier, whereas the behavioral benefits, or I should say drawbacks, not benefits, but the social drawbacks presented themselves well past first grade. And what they found is that children tended to be more aggressive, there was more incidences of bullying, and they were far more selfish. They had a lack of self-control. With that in mind, I'm not certain that that's the direction that we should really be headed in our culture. I think our schools already have enough problems with aggression and bullying and lack of self-control, but I don't think we need to add to that by formalizing preschool programs. And so that's just my – and then also to follow on with that, you've got a lot of children that just aren't ready for it yet. You've got kids who have visual perceptual problems, other fine motor problems, and perhaps that sticking them in a formalized school setting is putting them under undue stress before they're actually ready and mature enough to make those demands be fair to the child. And so those are some studies that I've seen out there. I also saw, I can't hardly believe it, but I actually agree with Dr. John Dewey, who is called the father of modern education philosophy, which, believe me, I'm surprised I'm agreeing with him, but I am. And what he's saying is that he says that eye strain on young children doing close-up work, which means like reading and alphabet and writing, that sort of thing, is actually puts an undue stress on a young developing child's eyes, so that there's a myopia problem among young children. And he, who I disagree with on many things, he says, recommended that children should not be doing this type of work until 8 years of age. Which is interesting. I mean, most of us get started at 5 or 6 or even 7. Compulsory
right.
age here in Indiana is 7. And he is recommending here not even starting until 8. So there's been a lot of changes over the last 100 years of education philosophy that we've got from, you know, let's not put undue stress on kids until they're 8 to, hey, let's put 4-year-olds in school and, you know, pressure their developing bodies.
Absolutely. Well, and I know that a lot of homeschool families are surprised, actually, when the IHE takes an interest in proposed legislation that doesn't seem to include us at face value. And I know we've seen a lot of questions recently on our Facebook pages asking why we are concerned about bills that are aimed at the public school system. And obviously, the laws as they're written would seem to exclude us. When you first read through them, but how important is it for us as homeschool families to be aware of these proposed changes?
Well, again, I go back to compulsory attendance age. We started seeing parental rights, specifically in education, start being eroded just with compulsory attendance age. So that's something, you know, some people be like, well, you know, what does that really have to do? Well, it has a lot to do with parental rights. And as our earlier talk discussed, you know, our educational rights are our parental rights. You know, it's from these rights, the First Amendment, the 14th Amendment, that we get our rights. That's why you can be a, you know, your Christian faith or your Catholic or your atheist or humanistic or even Hindu or Sikh faith. That's why you can do that, because of the First and 14th Amendment. So if you take away my right to educate my child as I see fit, also taking away your right to see to it that your child gets to be educated in the way that you see fit, whether it be religious or not. And the reason there's this connection is because historically in the United States, the initial emergence of education in the United States was from large Protestant Christian sects. They're the ones that ran our schools. So a lot of these, education actually came from the desire to teach children to learn the Word of God for themselves. And as such, that is why it is so intricately interwoven in with our religious freedoms. And so when you take away my right to educate, you're also taking away your right to teach your child the faith that you choose.
Absolutely. So basically, a lot of when we watch a lot of these things, as our organization watches them, it's because we understand and we see the bigger implications in the educational philosophy of our state. Because as these laws, you know, as we keep creeping this compulsory school age down lower and lower, it's really about the movement behind it that really says that who do the children belong to? And we're saying the children belong to us as parents, that we are standing on our parental rights, whereas
correct.
As the state wants to bring down the school age, they're saying that our children basically belong to them. And those are opposing viewpoints.
Correct. And that's something that I often tell people. I say there's two ways of looking at education, and one is that the parents have all the rights and responsibilities. You can't give everyone all the responsibilities and none of the rights. That's not the way the world works. You either get all
right.
the rights and all the responsibilities. And so if parents are given all the responsibilities towards children, they also have to be given the rights towards their children. And from that philosophy, that follows that parents are ultimately the deciders of how their children are educated. And from that decision, they can then choose what avenue of education they want to go, whether it's home educating, online, public schools, or private schools. They can choose that. And then it becomes in the parents' hands of how to go about doing that. Whereas the other way is looking that children really belong to the state, and parents are really little more than contractors to the state to carry mm-hmm. out the duties of nurturing and educating the children. And in that sense, when a parent doesn't do exactly what the state wants it to do, it has violated its contract with the state, and thus the contractor can be punished for not educating the way the child the way the state sees fit. And that is a major problem. That is not any way that someone who believes in that the Lord gave us children as a gift, that's not an appropriate way to view children. Children are given to parents to educate and to love and to nurture. They are not given to the state. That's never found anywhere in the Bible. And thinking it otherwise would be a gross misuse of scripture.
And I can't think of a better way to actually conclude our conversation. I think we've covered a lot of material. I know that we actually, right before you and I started this conversation, we had some breaking news coming through that the governor decided not to support a grant application for more federal money to support federal preschools. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that before we go off the air?
Sure. I don't have a whole lot of information, but I did see that the governor, essentially when a grant is sent off, they have to, the governor signs on, as does the superintendent of public instruction, and that's how the request is made. And the governor has chosen not to send to the federal government a request for a grant for this money. And to some, that might seem like it's none of our business, but the reality is that this federal money doesn't stick around forever. And what this money was designed to do was to create a program that would never go away. Government programs rarely go away. They're rarely canceled. They're rarely shelved. So once you create something, it's a monster that stays alive. And one thing I know about the federal government, having worked there, is that the federal government doesn't always keep its promises when it comes to funding. So while they're willing to help us fund a lot of this now, in, say, 5-10 years, the federal funding would be gone. And then we would be left holding the tax bill to pay for this. And there are already struggling families out there who are choosing to live on one income so that they can educate their children as they see fit in exercising their parental rights in the First and 14th Amendments. And this would very much make it that much harder for them to make the sacrifices needed to be able to be home and educating their children. So for that,
right.
I am very grateful to the governor for being willing to step down from the preschool funding and understanding that this is something that was very near and dear to Hoosiers' hearts. So thank you, Governor Pence.
Well, Allison, I just thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to me, and thank you for serving Indiana homeschoolers as a part of the IAHE's legislative team. I know that I am not alone. We appreciate the time that you and the other team members give to help protect our freedom across the state. And for all of our listeners, if you would like more information about how you can volunteer with the IAHE, I encourage you to visit our website. And we also hope that we will see you February 25th. The IAHE is sponsoring a homeschool day at the state capitol, and this is a great time to come together with your fellow Indiana homeschoolers, get some information. You don't have to know anything if you just want to be educated about the legislative process and have a little bit of fun while doing it.
We do have the Adopt a Legislator program, where you can also join in with the legislative team and making your legislator accountable and knowing what he's doing. So please feel free to join us.
All of those details can be found on our website at www.iahe.net. And thank you again, Allison. Have a wonderful day.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed our show and will join us next time for the IAHE Informer podcast. You can always find the latest shows on the web through Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network at ultimateradioshow.com. For more information about the Indiana Association of Home Educators, visit us on the web at iahe.net. You can also find the IAHE on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Until then, God bless.